You're listening to 100.9 FM Perth. Good to be with you. Jeremy Garlett here. Hello. And this is Health Matters. It's a program which looks at health within our community and people in the wider community as well, because there are some of the issues that people do suffer from time to time. And it can be very challenging for people. And today we're going to focus on depression. It is a subject that is not talked about much, and some of the mental anguish that people do go through. And I have two young gentlemen who are in the studio here at Noongar Radio 100.9 FM, and lovely to see you here. There's Fred Yasso. How are you, Fred?
Very well, Jeremy. How are you?
Tell me a little bit about you, Fred, and what you do in the community.
So I'm originally from Queensland. My dad's mother, Woolly Woolly and Newman people from central Queensland, and my mum's Jewry from North Queensland, and I was born in North Queensland.
Yeah.
A little town called Bowen. If you're ever in North Queensland, go check out the beaches in Bowen. Some of the best swimming and fishing in North Queensland. But I currently work at the Wangan Carter Specialist Aboriginal Mental Health Service. I'm the service coordinator for that organisation, and we are a community mental health service that provides services through the Perth metro area for Aboriginal people.
Yeah. And another young gentleman, or gentleman, who is in the studio is John van der Gizom. Good to be with you. Is that the right
thing? Good morning. Yeah, that's pretty great.
No. John, tell me a little about you, what you do.
Okay, I was born in Perth and raised in Perth. I'm a social worker, and I've worked in mental health, and probably more specifically Aboriginal mental health for close to 30 years now.
Wow.
And the last 7 or 8 years I've been working with Wangan up Specialist Aboriginal Mental Health Service. We're covering the whole metropolitan area here.
Yeah. Mm. And, of course, you dispute, Fred, that the beaches are better here?
Well, I don't mind the beaches here, but the water's too cold. So, you know, if you ever go to Queensland, at least you can get into the water, because it's just, yeah, always nice. Every time of the year, even wintertime, you can go swimming in Queensland.
Yeah, yeah.
The water goes a little bit cold, but not as cold here. Summertime here is worse than wintertime there.
That makes sense. and of course, John, tell us about the things that you do at your particular workplace.
Oh, well, that's a pretty long list.
I know, yeah.
I think one of the things that we started out doing when we set up Specialist Aboriginal Mental Health Service was training Aboriginal people to work in mental health, and that's a really important thing. We have more than 20 staff, 60% Aboriginal. We encourage people to study. We have several people who have graduated from university in degrees related to mental health.
There's currently two people doing social work, one doing psychology, and two people doing nursing, all Aboriginal staff. Mm-hmm. So one of our key components of the service is not just providing services to public, but also building up that sustainability
in the workforce.
Yeah. Because I think when I started in mental health in 2006, there would be a handful of people working in mental health I'm talking mainly through government, WA Health, in the metro area. There's plenty of people working in country health service, I'm pretty sure, but I know for a fact that in 2006 there was only about 5 of us working. We have, as I said, I think it's about 11 or 12 in our own service now. That's just one service.
Yeah.
And there are people scattered through all the health service, all the different mental health services in Perth Metro and also in the country.
Yeah.
So that's the importance of the program that was developed, the statewide Specialist Aboriginal Mental Health Service. So we're one component of that.
And mental health isn't, well, in the early days, it wasn't spoke about much.
No, it definitely wasn't spoken about. It's starting to get, it's starting to be spoken about now in community. I think we don't realise how much mental health affects our lives. you know, we're talking about depression. Depression affects a lot of people, Aboriginal people, definitely more than, you know, they talk about the 1 in 5 for depression in the general public, but it's probably higher, and it is higher than Aboriginal.
Aboriginal people experience depression and anxiety at a higher level than the wider community.
Yeah.
I think if you're looking for an explanation for that, I don't think you need to go much further than looking at history.
Yeah, can we explore that?
Sure we can. I think, you know, the Australia's history since settlement hasn't been particularly kind to Aboriginal people. There's been removal from country and denial of culture and language. I think we're talking about 225 years of that, continuous trauma. It does have its effects. I think the reason why people didn't talk about it very much is that they just got used to it.
So it's intergenerational trauma we're talking about here.
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely intergenerational.
Yeah. Mm. And I suppose in a way, in dealing with this, how would we do, or we should do within communities, how can we look at that intergenerational trauma?
The first step we always talk to clients is one of the first things we do is try and make sure that, number one, they're linked up with the GP.
Yes.
So it's really important, not just for mental health, but for every part, health in general, that you have a GP. You know, having a GP that you can trust, that you can go to and talk to about this stuff, about depression or any issue, is really important. And we push that within our service about, hey, GPs are important because we can look after the mental health side of stuff, but the physical stuff, which affects your mental health. Because, you know, Aboriginal concept of health has always been holistic, but what it means is that mental health affects physical health, affects ability to earn money, which will affect housing, which will affect, you know, all sorts of stuff. So everything is interrelated.
Yeah.
And Aboriginal concept of health has always been holistic, and you need to acknowledge that. You know, when you work on mental health as a service, we don't work in purely what they call the medical model. Our doctors, we have doctors who work in that space, but they also are open to looking at the psychosocial interventions and work that's done by allied health and the work that's done by a nursing team, and especially the work that's done by, you know, traditional healers that we utilise with our service, and also our Aboriginal staff who have great knowledge and cultural knowledge about, you know, ways of working community that assist the
and village. Connection to the community.
Yes.
I think that's the great strength of employing Aboriginal people in mental health, is that it's a safe way in.
Mm.
People, trust is a big issue.
Yeah.
I think trust has always been a big issue in the Aboriginal community, and that, once again, that reflects on history. If we have Aboriginal people working with us, it makes it easier for people to relate and for people to develop that trust and to make some moves towards improving their life.
Mm. How was that so?
So,
give us some examples.
So I always use this. Like, we do a lot of talking to nursing staff outside of our and other doctors and stuff about this thing about trust. Now, if you are a health provider and you're providing a care to someone, and you're asking them to take medication, change their diet, do exercise, if your relationship with someone is not trustworthy, if they don't trust you, whatever you say will be taken, will be listened to, but not necessarily maybe followed through, because you don't have the trust of that person. Trust is a really important part of, you know, Dr. Helen Milroy, who was one of the consultant psychiatrists that started with William Cadet when it first started. She always talks about mental health. And mental health is a business. It's about relationships. That's what our service is built on. So that trust is really important. As we're talking about impact of trauma, people become distrustful of government, of people trying to do things to them, because stuff has been done to the Aboriginal community for 225 years, and a lot of it hasn't been very good. So expecting government to come in and say, well, we're changed now, we're going to do something different, there's still that anxiety, there's still that distrust of government. And, you know, you know it in your own families. I've got families that will trust government and the families that don't trust government.
Yeah.
In my own family.
Yeah.
Because they believe, and it's their experience and their what they've learnt from their own experiences with government has, you know, so we spend a lot of our time. That's why it's important that we have Aboriginal staff on our, on within our service, because they're the few people at the front door knocking on the door with the clinician behind them saying, hey, we're from Wangankardup, can we help you?
Yeah.
And they do that, that they do that sort of, I call it meet and greet, get to know them, introduce them, do that vouching of the clinician.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The clinicians are starting, our clinicians, like Jono's been around Aboriginal people and worked in this town for a long time. So he has a way of working with Aboriginal people. That's part of his way he works anyway. But even our newer staff, we teach them, hey, this is how you go about talking to Aboriginal people.
Yeah. And how successfully have you that's been for going to the clinicians and the doctors? And of course, it'll be a big area that you're covering here.
So it's interesting because we haven't really... We've been going through a process where we're trying to evaluate what the... how we make a positive impact on people's lives.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, we can talk about how many times we visit someone and how many times we see someone, but that doesn't really tell you how... they're travelling. So we've actually been doing talks, talking to the people that we talk to and asking them, okay, when you come into this talk, did you gain anything about it? Do you think you're more comfortable about approaching Aboriginal people? Those sort of questions. And you know what? I think we get about a 99% rate of people saying the stuff we talked about, the skills and tools we give you, clinicians, actually they will utilise and they will... So the feedback's been really actually quite impressive considering
it's a major part of our role, providing training to non-Aboriginal clinicians. Not always clinicians. No. Sometimes it's support staff. The patient care assistants and the catering people.
That's a really... We're talking about holistic here.
Yes,
we are.
And it's amazing. You're talking about, it's a big family we're talking about.
Well,
here.
I often joke when we often, every 3 or 4 months, we might get the staff together and say, well, we need to have a time where we break... I call it breaking bread as a family, because we are a small little family. And sometimes I'm sure that the Wangankardup guys are probably listening to this. They understand that, you know, I often sometimes view them as my family.
Because
even though I've got 5 children at home, I've still got, I don't know how many children at work. They're not children, they're great workers. But we get together as family, and even our clients, when we invite them in, we talk about having the Sams of the Wangankardup family is our clients, because we have to have, to make positive change in people's lives.
Yeah.
They have to trust you, and they have to want to do something for themselves. So they don't want to do it for... They don't take the medication for us.
Yes.
We have to say to them, you do it for yourself. But to have that conversation and have it in a meaningful way, you need to have a relationship from Jeremy, or else what's the point?
That's right.
You're basically just giving someone a depo, giving them a pill, and saying, well, see you in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, yeah, and of course that doesn't really work for our people.
Well, it doesn't work for anyone.
No.
Yeah.
And I think for our guys, because of the trust issues and the trauma, we have to go softly. We have to go, hey, let's get to know each other first. Let's get used to it. We might not even talk about business the first time. We might ask them, so where are you from? What have you been up to? Have you had any children? Talk about the football, which is quite depressing for me. Or talk about kids and family and all that sort of stuff. So we get that sort of conversation going, and then we start delving into, okay, so what's going on with you? What's happening in your lives? It's a yarn up. It's using yarning to provide.
It's a completely different model to what mainstream is doing. But of course, you're also assisting.
Yes.
As well, out in the community in mainstream health, and when you're dealing with depression and people having to confront these issues of trauma,
we do not go around too much, and this is like a rare occurrence for us to even come to on radio or even anywhere to go and talk about our service. We don't like to talk about our service, as I said to our staff. You let your work do the talking for you. If people are talking positively about you in community, then that's what it is. But the reason why is because we how do you spruik mental health services?
Yeah.
How do you, you know, sell mental health services? It's not really about that.
It's not about that,
is it? No, it's about, hey, this is where we are. This is who we are. If you need help, come and call us up.
Yeah.
Give us a call. Things that we don't, and we'll have honest conversations with people. If something's happening and it's not in our, within our capabilities, we'll say, hey, we can't do that, but let us find out where you can get that.
Yeah.
We have a philosophy that there's no wrong door. If people have a question to ask or they need some help, even if it's just a referral or a phone number where they can get the appropriate help, we'll see if we can provide that.
Yeah.
They're looking, if their issue is drugs and alcohol, then what we will say to them is, okay, well, it sounds like you need to be thinking about drugs and alcohol, and these are the services out there. Would you like to us to refer you to them? Or, you know, because the thing is that it's like anything. I always used to say when I was working in government outside of health, I would say, you know, if you've got average people coming into your service as a government service, they're usually coming in for help.
Yeah.
They actually need something. So if you're gonna turn them away or make things difficult for them, they won't come back.
Yeah.
So if people need help, help them.
Yeah.
It's a simple, I guess, I had an epiphany about 5 years ago. I realised that I'm a public servant.
Yeah.
And previously to that, I would be like, no, I'm not a public servant, because all of the connotations of public service and all that sort of stuff. But the reality is, I'm a public service because I love to help
people.
And this job, even though where I used to work, me and John, I used to work together back in 2006. We started our first day. He taught me everything I know about mental health. The reality is, although now I'm his boss, so it's quite interesting. I always tell him to get back to work, but he never listens.
And of course, you two young gentlemen who've, we would have experienced a lot of things that you've done and good things, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. Tell us about the receptions you've been getting too as well from within the community.
So I think families that of the people that we deal with, I think they always talk about how we were able to do the simple things like keeping maybe their loved one out of prison.
Yeah.
Or getting them a place to stay. Because it's all part of it. Mental health, you know, as I said, we're a holistic model. If someone's homeless, we try and house them, you know. Places, people, we go to people and you go to a house and there might be 10 people living in a two-bedroom apartment. Getting those people out of that apartment into a place of their own where they can have their own space where, you know, the health issues and the mental health issues of overcrowding is ridiculous. But you know, those sort of things. So those sort of things, and our feedback that we get from our clients talk about, you know, this. They talk about things like, you know, I'd be in jail if it wasn't for William Carter. Those sort of type of things. Oh, you know, they give me they help my life because sometimes they're the only social event that I have is the guys coming around and seeing me and taking me out for a coffee or taking me to do stuff. And that's the only social event some people are getting because most of their lives they're spending isolated.
And that's the social isolation which occurs to people. Yeah. And I think Beyond Blue was talking about that as well, the social isolation, and that's the thing that people, you know, they're responding to those things. They're isolated, they're not talking. Mm. How important is that connection? So you're a conduit, really, in a way, to people in need.
We are social animals, and we need to socialise. I think that's really important. Unless, of course, you're going on some sort of, you know, meditation trip where you want to get away from everyone and be alone and find yourself.
Mindfulness
is actually mindfulness is really, it's a really, I love the way, mindfulness is one of those things that's, if you ever get someone to come in and talk to you about mindfulness, Jeremy, it'd be really good because I think it's a really important tool for people. But in relation to social isolation, I think social isolation, it's one of those things, it's like, imagine having people, you know, just basically being by yourself, sitting at home doing nothing by yourself. That's what a lot of people deal with, because they maybe their mental illness, they struggle to go out in public, or they fear that they might think. So our guys coming around, taking them out, doing stuff with them. And we don't just go and do social things. There's making sure the medication's done, making sure the getting to GP appointments.
Sometimes it's as simple as reconnection with family, and that's a really important thing. Something that probably it's not a mental health thing, but it's a positive aspect of the work we're doing. That we get people to the point where they're confident enough to reconnect with their families where they've been isolated for a long time, and that makes a big difference to their lives.
Yeah. Mm. And when you identify someone that's in that situation, what are some of the identifying features? Because, of course, it's social isolation is probably number one, but do you make contact with family or others who show some concern for their family?
When we first started, we were sitting around thinking, well, how do we know when we're making a difference? And one of the things we came up with is when we start getting as many referrals from families and individuals as we do from other mental health services, then we know we're getting there. And I think we got to that point last year after about 5 years, which is really positive. Mm. There is that trust, people noticing what we're doing out in the community. We know that confidentiality is extremely important for Aboriginal people, and we maintain that quite strictly. That's something that we do. We don't carry yarns around the place, and people notice that.
That's another part of trust, isn't it?
It's a very important part, especially for blackfellas. That confidentiality is really important. You know, I've seen not here in this state, but I've seen in other states where like medical services like the AMSs don't get used because of there's views that the people are carrying yarns in other states. So, and that can ruin an organisation, and that's why it's really important that we drill this into it. Another thing is that when we do get we drill that into our clinicians, but our Aboriginal staff as well. You can't go home from this place and talk about people that you've seen and all that sort of stuff. And if it does happen, it never does happen because we tell people you'll get sacked. Because we take it seriously. You have to take, there's things that in this, confidentiality is one of the most serious things for our service, especially being. The good thing also is I'm the service coordinator, so I'm sort of like the one that runs the shop, so to speak.
Shop front.
and we've got, and Michael Mitchell is my boss, who's the manager. He's my manager. So the other good thing about our service is the leadership inside it is Aboriginal. So I don't need to go to Michael to ask him for stuff to do things this way because it's culturally appropriate.
I see what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? You've worked in places where you're trying to work with Aboriginal people, and then you have to go to someone who's not Aboriginal and say, hey, I need to do this because this is the way that culturally we do things, and have to explain and do a business case and all this sort of stuff. I just go to Mitch and say, and he goes, yeah, brother, that's really, or he'll come to me and say, we need to do this. Oh yeah, sorry, I didn't realise. We can work really quick. We don't have to have that. Aboriginal leadership is...
That's amazing.
It's really important. I think when you look at it, I think we've had our Michael going away and talking to the Australian Health Minister's Advisory Council, which is one of the peak bodies around under the Closing the Gap and CAIG stuff. And when he went and talked about our services are one of a kind. So Perth and WA have a one of a kind service, never been done across the whole of the Australia, where we have an Aboriginal-led program sitting in WA Health with clinicians, and we stand alone where we can provide services to people who have mental illness, as a standalone service. Most other services, we have people, Aboriginal people embedded in them, and they work for a mainstream service.
Yeah.
So, it's one of a kind.
Fred and John, it's great to talk to you here on Noongar Radio, and we'll still talk to you in the program on health matters? Because this is a, you know, this is a really, we'll look at other aspects of some of the statistics later on. So what we'll do
Before you go, I just want to point out, like, the last Productivity Commission's report on overcoming Indigenous disadvantage, and we talked about depression. Yeah. So, almost one third of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders across the nation, over 18, or 32.8%, report experiencing very high levels of psychological distress. So it's around about 2.6 times the rate of non-Indigenous Australians nationally.
Wow.
In WA, it's actually more. So in WA Aboriginal people have reported experiencing 36.5%. So it's 3.3 times the rate of our non-Indigenous West Australians. So, you know, we talk about depression. Psychological distress is one of those things that, you know, it sort of will indicate that people are feeling it.
Yeah.
We're all feeling it.
And how do you gauge that, John, with all that information? How do you gauge the what's happening within the community? What's the formula?
It's the stories.
The stories, the people, the context?
Yeah. When you come in, people come in and talk about their lives, and you think, my God, I'm amazed that someone has been through this in the last 2-3 years. You know, the constant going to funerals.
Oh, well, yeah.
Mm. The constant sorry business. The constant, you know...
Grief and trauma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pressures of living, you know, money, having money, being able to provide, having good accommodation.
All of these things have their effect. The thing is, I think a lot of the time, people have lived with it so long and generations have lived with it for so long, they don't recognise that there's anything wrong or that there's anything can be done about the way they're feeling.
Is that desensitised? What's happening within when they're right?
And part of it's also our resilience as Aboriginal people. We're very resilient. Some of the things that
the word resilience coming up again.
Yeah.
In the community as well. I've been listening to this.
Yeah.
Resilience within the community.
It's amazing. Like you talk about clinicians that I remember talking to a clinician, a very experienced clinician, talks about how I introduced her to a lady, and she was doing an assessment and she's coming out of the room and she's saying to me, I'm amazed at what that young lady's been through.
Yeah.
I said to her, if I'd been through half of the things you've been through, I'd already be here and already been seeking help from a mental health organisation. She's been through twice as much. And, if it was her, she would have cracked at the first or second issue that came up in her life. And, it's a sad thing that it's good that we've got resilience, but it's sad that we need resilience.
Interesting, isn't it?
You know what I mean? It's a positive, but it's a positive that's been born out of something that we shouldn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. No, we should be dealing with it in another way.
Well, good, very good point. We're going to go to a song now, and Fred and John, thank you very much, because we're going to explore the meat in the sandwich and find out what's in within the communities as well. But some of the statistics which you've just brought up as well, which is very interesting. So we'll just go to a break, and you're listening to Health Matters. And this program is heard not only here in Perth, right throughout Australia as well. So when I mean this program will be broadcast on various radio stations right around right around Australia. So good to be with you right here on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM Perth. You're listening to Noongar Radio 100.9 FM Perth. And this is Health Matters, and we're talking, well, it is about mental health within our community and the importance. And we, I suppose we can't, when you look at mental health, we need to talk. We need to have conversation. And the conversation that we're having here, two gentlemen here are talking about conversations and about mental health. And John and Fred, you're both in that industry. How important is the conversation when it comes to, you're not only speaking to your clients, you're speaking to people within the community as well, and clinicians and other people, extended families when it comes to health?
I think just about anywhere there is some feeling about mental health, people tend to avoid talking about that subject. They can be a little scared of it.
Shame.
Yeah.
They could be shame. Yeah. But, as we mentioned before, it's a lot more common than people really acknowledge. One in five people will experience a mental health problem in their life. So, you know, that's people you know. That's people in your family. That's your friends. That's your neighbours. That's everyone around you. Someone's going to experience that sometime in their life, and they need your support.
I was going to say some of the things that people can look for.
And of course, remember that that saying: spot the hazard, assess the risk, then make the change.
Yeah.
I suppose it's some way. That's what we have to. I suppose we all can do that. You know, non-clinician people, families, and that is where the network comes. Where someone's there saying, "Okay, John, we've got a family member who's not well, or yourself, Fred. We've got someone we need to talk to. Where do they go from there?"
I think, you know, if we can talk about depression specifically, I think one of the really important things for people to recognise is that there doesn't have to be a reason. We can all feel a little down about some circumstances in our life, or if you're a Melbourne supporter.
Yeah, I was going to say football. Please don't. You read my mind.
But, you know, you get over that next season, hopefully.
It's always next season.
But, you know, there doesn't have to be a reason for becoming depressed. Sometimes it just happens to people, and it can be quite torturous trying to figure out why. And often the expectations of the people around them are, well, there has to be a reason, so tell me what it is and we can get on with it. It can be quite confusing to people when they're put in that spot.
Or the old chestnut, you just need to snap out of it.
Yeah.
But you can't snap out of it. It's a medical condition that is occurring, which you have no control over.
Yeah.
Mm. Unless you seek help for it. John?
And the sort of things you can notice, either in yourself or in someone who's close to you, is they stop doing the things they enjoy.
Right, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So there are little signs that you can...
Just little signs, yeah.
You can see within the community.
Yeah. They're avoiding...
What are some of the things do you reckon they stop? Give us an example of some of the things that that gets in the way of somebody, and they've stopped, they've gone into a little isolation process.
Withdrawing from close family and friends, maybe drinking more or using other substances more. And, you know, there's a bit of a trap in that, I think, because we tend to think of things like alcohol and ganja as the good time drugs that we're using.
We see it as people see it as a release.
And often you just need to come out and have a drink and, you know, you'll be okay. But what a lot of people don't realise is that alcohol and ganja are also depressives, and you might
alcohol's
feel better.
Alcohol's a depressive. It depresses you.
Yeah.
That's why we like country music when we drink alcohol. I joke.
But really interesting that, you know, because it's almost like a false sense of security developed.
It is.
Yes.
Yes. Because if you drink for long enough, you'll get to the depressed point.
Yeah. And of course you want more.
Yes.
And then the cycle.
It might make you feel better right now, but tomorrow the problem's still there and you're probably going to feel worse. So that can be a bit of a trap. Losing that enjoyment of the things you usually do. Yeah. Even if you are trying to do the things that you usually enjoy and you just don't feel that feeling anymore. And that could be an indication of depression. Inability to concentrate. Just can't keep your mind on one subject. I mean, these things happen to all of us in various circumstances, but if these things are happening, or a combination of these things are happening, maybe there's something
to be done,
Feeling overwhelmed or guilty, and some people talk about feeling guilty, but they don't know why or what about. Mm. It's just this overpowering feeling that comes over them, and leading to frustration, eroding your confidence, losing your confidence in yourself, feeling unhappy. And I think if people are feeling consistently unhappy for 2 or 3 weeks, and that's unusual, maybe they need to take a look at what's happening in their life. Not being able to make decisions, just having the same thoughts going through your mind over and over and not being able to make a decision on something is another indication that there may be some depression. Just feeling miserable and sad.
Now, What are some of the solutions? Like, say, for instance, someone is presented at your particular location, your place. What happens there to the individual and the follow-up and the assistance that can be provided for these people?
Okay. Not everyone is going to need a medical solution.
No.
Not everyone is going to need medication.
Yeah.
If you do need medication, it's important that you take it and you keep taking it and keep consulting with your doctor. But there's a lot of aspects of life that you can get into which are going to help. And, you know, having a good diet is one.
Yes.
Very definitely.
Exercise?
Exercise. Regular exercise. Get out in the sun.
Yes.
Even if it's just sitting in the sun for a while, that helps too. But getting out and exercising regularly does as much as anything else.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, that's really important.
And how have you been promoting that? Have you been, like, I suppose it'll be a connection of other agencies, an interagency connection here.
So what we do with our clients and our mob that we deal with, what we do is we're a big component of the you have choice and consequence.
Yes, yeah.
So everyone has options in life. We don't want to be government telling people what to do. We don't want to be our doctors and nurses our social workers won't up there to tell people how to live their lives. What we do is we talk about, okay, so right now you're feeling down. You have an option. The options are you can do nothing and you'll continue to feel down, but nothing will change. You can take medication, is an example of what you can do. These are the consequences of that. These are the side effects, what happens, things you need to remember. You can look at your diet. We can go to a GP and get you access to a dietitian. Or you can look at exercise physiology or going to the gym. These all have consequences. And then let people go away. And often they have to, because, you know, people can't make decisions in isolation. Average people don't make decisions in isolation. We go back and consult family. We consult our partners, our uncles and aunties, because if I have to do something, it affects responsibilities I have at home.
Yeah.
So you have to make that decision. So they'll go away and they'll think about it and they'll come back and tell us, well, this is what we're going to do. And we support people whichever way they want to do it. So that's the model in a nutshell.
We're never in a hurry to
push.
Get people to, we recognise that, look, people need time to make their own decisions. They're the decisions that stick.
Yes.
If I tell you to do something and I keep telling you to do something, maybe nothing's going to happen. So we give people a bit of space to talk with their family, talk with their loved ones and come up with their own decision. When they're ready to go, we can help them.
So it's like drug and alcohol rehabilitation. What works in that situation is if the person who wants to makes the decision to quit and makes that decision to go into rehab.
Yeah.
The chances of them going through and quitting are a lot higher than if me and John are telling them to go to rehab and do it, because they're doing it for us. But why? You should be doing it for yourself. So the person has to make that choice.
Basically, you're talking about empowerment here.
To empower
the individual.
Exactly right. So,
And tell us about some of the instruments of empowerment that you look at.
So I think looking at the positives in people's lives, positivity, because we get bombarded with all the negatives about Aboriginal people, you know, that they say about us, that we do this and we do that, or we're in jail, or, you know, all this sort of stuff. But the reality is there's so many positive stories out there about Aboriginal people going through life and actually excelling and exceeding in life, you know. And I think having a look at, you know, strength of family is a really good, really, really good positive aspect of our Aboriginal community.
Because and people do, they talk often about family members and say, well, you know, my nephew's playing football. And and of course, it opens up a different process.
Yes, yes.
And a different process when it comes to change as well.
Yeah. Role modelling. People role modelling in community, doing the right thing, people excelling at doing, getting, you know, either good jobs and working if that's what they want, or being good at sport, you know, or being very good at art, or, you know, excelling at all these things. Those sort of things, we need to celebrate those people.
Yeah.
People that are making it. Because, you know, sometimes we have that tall poppy syndrome in our community where, you know, oh, who you think you are, you're better than everyone else. Well, actually, no, they're doing great stuff and let's celebrate
that process. And again, it's celebrating people's lives and celebrating a community, and to see the good as well.
Yes.
You know, that's
look
the main.
That empowering thing that happens when, you know, I find empowerment in when my kids pass the year at school. I'm not into the celebrate every, you know, graduate every year, but I love the fact that my kids are going through and just passing school.
Yeah.
Passing, getting awards at school, those sort of things, taking those times to you know, and I see other people, you know, who celebrate just staying off the alcohol. They make a decision to not drink alcohol. They make a decision to lose weight. They make a decision to exercise more regularly. Those things there. John's laughing at me because I haven't made those decisions yet, John. I've thought about it. But, you know, the little wins in life are often the best. They're like, you can go through life thinking about all the stuff that's going to go wrong, or you can go through life celebrating the stuff that, all those little wins that we have, because we, you know, you don't often get a very big win, you know, unless you win the lottery or something, and that, what's the chance of that happening? You don't often get a good win, big win in life, so celebrating the small wins are often a really important part. I think it's an important way of living. Personally, that's how I live.
Yeah, and it's good to know that, you know, from an Aboriginal point of view, that there are processes that we can use in this, I suppose, this life's journey to be able to understand that and going into the source of that process.
We touched about history before and you talked about transgenerational trauma. And trauma is one of those things, I think, it's throughout all our community because of the stuff that goes wrong in our community, the suicides. People in prison, you know, the three in closed gap targets, the three sort of areas that got nationwide we're not doing well at as a nation and as a government, as people, is mental health, suicide and incarceration.
Yeah.
So when they look at the close the gap targets, the correct targets, the three areas that have regressed or haven't gone well, is those three areas, actually mental health, suicide and, which, you know, but what I'm, so the point I'm getting to is that, we talked about trauma, but it's one of those things that we, you know, there's so much, there's an example of so many things that can get us down in life.
Yeah.
That's why we need to celebrate the good times.
Yeah, yeah. It's lovely talking to you two gentlemen regarding this, because it's really important that there are people who might be in a situation and they would like to be able to get some form of assistance. What would you advise them?
Well,
if they're listening to this program,
I think, you know, there's still a lot of fears around mental health services, and I think it's really important for people to understand that if you do feel that you're suffering from depression, your first stop's your GP.
Yeah, that's the first.
That's the first stop. Yeah. GPs are very well trained these days to work with people with depression, and in all likelihood, there'll be no need for you to go to a mental health service as well.
Yeah, but
if you've got a good relationship with your GP, and you can talk with them, that is the start of your solution is there.
Yeah,
and I think that takes a lot of the fear away.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that you're going to end up in a hospital. It doesn't mean you're going to be under a mental health service for a long time. You can see your GP and deal with it there.
And the conversation, Fred, it's important.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
That conversation.
And talking about, and are you able to talk about what's happening with you and being, you know, open with the GP about, you know, the symptoms and some of the stuff that John talks about, if that's happening to you, you need to talk to your doctor about them. Even the simplest things, you might think, oh, there's nothing, but it's important. The other thing, sorry, Jeremy, I'm just taking it back a little bit. The other thing about the positive thing that is, and I think we were talking about in the break, is getting back to the country.
Yeah.
and how important land is for Aboriginal people, and being that connection to land is another way of going back and recharging, getting back home, being in country, being out in the sun. But being that, going back to country is really important for people sometimes.
Yeah,
if you, especially if you're living in Perth, you're away from country, going back home and just recharging.
Yeah.
And regaining that connection to that cultural connection to your mob and your ancestors is a really important part of who we are. What we
well, need. I'll tell you what, we've only got a minute to go, but it was really absolutely lovely talking to you, Fred Yoso. It's nice talking to you, and it's beautiful to share this as well. And John van der Gezen, nice talking to you as well. And would you like to just sort of recap something? You've only got about a minute to go.
I will
start. But just tell us about the agencies,
yes,
and the numbers.
Yes. Yeah. So, so if you want to contact Wangan Cardup Specialist Aboriginal Mental Health Service, we're on 9235 2400. So if you're asking to talk, and ask to talk to our triage nurse or one of our workers, about, what's going on, and they can give you advice and, where to go from here.
The other thing I think also is, you know, there's a lot of resources out there these days.
Yes.
It's as simple as, Googling Beyond Blue. There's a lot of information there on what depression is and how to seek some help too. And it's, that's a lot easier for people, I think, in the first stages. Try to inform themselves about what's happening.
So the other thing is that there's the Mental Health Emergency Response Line, which is a 24-hour free service, and their number in Metro is 1300 888. If you're in Peel, it's 1-800-676-822. I don't know why, but that's what's happening. And also, you know, so if you need if you need to talk to someone, you've got clinicians that will talk to you over the phone and guide you through.
Gentlemen, thanks for coming on this particular program. It's great to have this dialogue, and of course, let's hope there are people. Well, there is people out there in the community, and they will get in contact with you. And yeah, this is Health Matters right here on Noongar Radio.